Hi guys, welcome back to season 2 of the Home Staging Show podcast. This podcast was formerly known as the 30 Day Home Staging Challenge podcast. I'm so excited to be back today. As you might have noticed, we also have a new cover artwork for the show. I want to say thank you to those of you who have sent the questions and feedback during the hiatus of the show. It was really great to hear from you. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes, whether they're good or bad, so I can keep improving the show and bringing you content that is relevant to you. Today's show is sponsored by EcoJoe, the eco-friendly St. Joseph Statue Home Selling Kit. You can get your own in our shop on our website. Just go to stagetrimmer.com/shop. You can also get open house checklists and access to our new e-courses on our website. Before I get started today, I want to mention a major update here in the Stage Trimmer land. We have finally launched a self-paced home study video course on home staging. It is called Stage Your House Like a Pro. I made this course because I see that a lot of homeowners and real estate agents want more information on home staging, but may be limited because there may not be home staging professionals in their geographic areas. I also recognize the fact that not everyone wants to hire professional home stagers and may feel that they can do it themselves. The truth is that there are a lot of homeowners out there like that, even in San Francisco Bay Area where home staging is so popular and common. I have many friends who sold their homes without hiring a home stager, simply because all they needed were a few minor tweaks and a little bit of help. Or they simply have no budget for it. I also want to empower everyone to learn how to style their homes, whether it is for sale or for living. That is a big part of the drive behind this podcast and our blog. I think the way we live our lives have very strong correlation to our environments, and it's important to learn how to create a great environment that we and our families will enjoy and can prosper and thrive in. That's also the reason behind this course, because a lot of styling and design principles I cover in the course can also be translated into decorating your new homes for living. I also want to clear the air really quickly. I have some home stagers contacting me expressing concerns. I personally feel that there's so much information out there out on the internet. There's some great advices out there and there's not so great advices. Personally, I'm very passionate about the subject of home staging. I have been a home stager for almost 10 years, as you know. I've seen it working over and over again. I personally feel incredibly blessed and lucky to be able to help my clients to get their home show ready to sell. It is a gift and an act of service, even though I'm compensated financially for it. I don't see how this e-course is a replacement of a professional home stager. It is the next best thing when you don't have access to one. As a real estate professional, it is my job to help my clients to create wealth. I feel very passionate about educating people about home staging, and it has become a lifelong goal for me after 10 years being in the industry. This is why I've decided to devote myself into the education component of things, doing a podcast, writing a blog, and coming out with courses to do exactly that. Overall, it helps our industry more when there are more open dialogues about home staging and more education. There's no need to withhold information. There's enough work out there for everyone. Just look at other industries. There are plenty of workout tapes out there. There's still plenty of gyms and personal trainers working. Same with interior designs. There are tons of information out there and still plenty of work to go around. So more dialogue is actually better for the home staging industry. I really want to encourage you to start blogging and having that conversation with people in your market if you're a new home stager and a season one. With that being said, so let's start the show today. Today's show is all about your questions. So our first question is from Angie. She said, I would like to know how much furniture is enough in a room. I have been fretting about whether to leave dressers in the bedrooms. I talked to my realtor and she said I could go either way with our master because it's huge. I've decided, I think, to not have dressers in the kids' rooms, but to leave them in our room so it's not so empty. I'd love to know your thoughts on this, plus things like whether we should use a coffee table in the living room. It will hold the lifestyle props, but I think it will make my living room look too small. So I think your realtor has a great point. If your bedroom is huge and has a lot of room to move around in, then you should definitely leave your dresser. But if your bedroom is on the smaller side, I wouldn't leave the dresser in. The bigger pieces of furniture does eat up room visually and physically. So while they are necessary in everyday living, I actually recommend most of the time to remove dressers, buffets, hutches, and entertainment center for the purpose of selling. But keep in mind, I work in mostly starter home types of scenarios. So if you do have a big room or your home is very large with very, very big bedrooms, there are plenty of room for walking around these pieces, then leave them in. In regards to your coffee table, yes, I would recommend to have one. If you feel that your existing coffee table is too big, use something smaller. You can also substitute coffee table with trucks, ottomans, or two small side tables putting together side by side as your coffee table area. But having something that resembles the purpose of coffee table would be great to help grounding the space. When it comes to having enough furniture, I would recommend, for example, for living room, you want to have enough furniture to define the purpose of the room. So in the living room, we may have a sofa, a loveseat combo, or a sofa with two accent chair and coffee table with a rug on the floor grounding the space. Or if you have a bedroom, obviously you definitely need the bed and then the nightstands. So those are kind of the minimum things that are required in the room. And the best way to tell actually is taking a photo. I know this is a very simple trick and pretty much everyone's phone has a camera nowadays. So it's not that much effort to take a photo from the doorway just to see, like, do you feel that something is out of ordinary or how does the room feel to you? If you feel like something is missing, then you might need to add something in. The next question is from Sharon. Sharon said, we'd love to hear your take on dresser as well. We seem to be moving away from this, except in larger master bedroom. So I actually know Sharon. She's a home stager in another market. So like my answer for Angie in the last one, I normally don't use dressers in the bedrooms. I would actually use console table instead. And in some market, I think people call this sofa tables. These are really similar rectangle shape, but much smaller visually. So they're also less heavy visually, and they can still suggest the shape and potential use of the room. So console table is something that I use very often. They are a lot of times used in place for, like, for example, a heavy buffet or hutch in the dining room, or a chest in the master bedroom. So that's a really good substitute for that if you feel like the room is missing those pieces. The next question is also from Sharon. She says, staging dining areas, to set the table or not? We don't really do that, but I've seen many who do. So I personally feel that less is more. I prefer to have one centerpiece like a bowl of fruit, a floor arrangement, then setting the entire table. I actually very, 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 very rarely set the entire table just because I feel like I'm in the business of selling the space, not selling furniture and stuff. So the more focus should be placed on the space. However, I have heard of stagers from other markets, their target audience preferred them to set the dining tables. So it is really largely dependent on your market. You can usually tell by open houses in the neighborhood and the lifestyle in your target market. But my personal answer is no. Usually when I do dining room, I just have a simple, large, like a really pretty plate so I can put a bowl of fruit fillers in it. Or sometimes I might do arrangements for floral. And so that's really all you need. Next question is from Sue. Sue's asks, how to stage a little kid's room with a lot of stuff and lots of pink? So this is a great question, and we get asked similar questions a lot. I would actually recommend you to shy away from pink if you can. Obviously, if you are living where you're selling and your child's room is already painted all pink, there's really not much you can do unless you have the budget to repaint. Because pink is such a strong color in a lot of different markets, and it's also not very gender neutral. So the reason what I would recommend to shy away from pink is that in staging, you should stay fairly gender neutral. Pink, while it's a great color, it also doesn't read as well in the photos than colors like blue and green. So it depends on you. Say if your walls is like Barbie pink, there's not a lot you can do. You can usually break it up with artwork and with more muted accessories and decor and your bedding and stuff like that. I usually think, like, my model really when it comes to staging is less is more. Sorry, I can't talk today. So less is more. And so a lot of that is that you don't want it to look very overwhelming when you're looking at photos. So when we're looking at a photo, for example, your eye needs to rest somewhere, right? And usually we want it to be your focal point because that's the whole point of staging or even decorating your home, is that you want to be able to have kind of like a showpiece in the room to kind of highlight the focus in the room and highlight the purpose. So especially with staging is that you want to be able to spell that out really clearly for the home buyers. And using a very strong color can be distracting. And that's why I always kind of stick with kind of the gender neutral colors. And generally for kids' room, I also wouldn't recommend putting in a lot of stuff just because, especially with kids' accessories, it can come across looking like clutter in person and on photograph. So for a kids' room, generally, we will stage it with a child's bed. We'll add a play set, you know, like a play table, and then maybe like a few teddy bears on the seat. And then like a carpet on the floor to kind of warm the space up and ground it. And then we'll decorate the walls, obviously, with kid-friendly artwork. I've also seen a lot of homeowners have decals put on their walls for their children, which is totally fine as long as they accentuate the space and make it look really cute and inviting and not distracting. So remember, when you're staging, you're really selling to the buyer. You're selling the lifestyle they want to buy in. And if you ever watch Modern Family, like in Lily's room, Cameron had murals painted with his husband Mitchell and his own faces on them. That's too much. So you want to shy away from like the real personalized stuff when you're selling the house. Because not, especially when you really personalize it, it's very specific just for you. And so it's not neutral enough for a broad range of audience. And the other point is that you want to create a lifestyle the buyers want to buy into. Like, I can't emphasize this enough. Usually if you're staging a room as a child's room, you probably have multiple bedrooms in the house as well. So then I might do this one as a younger child room and then do an older child's room that can be read either as a teenager or a guest could live in there. In staging, I generally recommend to stay away from specific ideas, like very specific ideas, and then go toward more generalization since you do want to appeal to a great range of buyers. The next question is from Phyllis. So let me see. Okay, so Phyllis asks, here's a question I would love for you to answer on an upcoming episode. And thanks for asking, by the way. How to work around dated fixtures and furnishing when you are on a limited staging budget? Such as, in my case, things like, first, dated but otherwise good condition, honey spice maple kitchen cabinets that we don't have the money or energy to paint. Two, a small Taylor sage green sectional couch that we don't want to pay to replace unless absolutely necessary. We have a very awkward layout in our family room and a very tiny 89 inches by 89 inches sectional is the only thing that makes sense in there. The small of a sectional is not only very hard to find, but they're very expensive. Three, dated tile in the bathroom. In my case, 4x4 standard bone color tile on the walls and garden tub surround. Number five, dated color scheme throughout the main living areas. Due to the lack of extra money, our home is still stuck in the gold, green, rusty red era. The living spaces of our home are all painted in bare stable hay, a soft golden yellow. It would be a big job to repaint everything. So can we just do touch-up painting or repainting a room or two, or should we repaint everything? Six, a big brick fireplace. The brick is actually a very pretty mix of terracotta shades. Should we paint it though? I think you probably get the picture. Thanks again for your help. I'm looking forward to upcoming episodes. So thank you, Phyllis, for this great question. I love how detailed you are. So when it comes to dated fixture and furnishing, I would highly recommend to replace fixtures you can, that if you can, and leave the furnishing alone, unless they're in really bad condition for staging. But it sounds like in your case, it's not. The reason behind that is the buyers are not going to buy your sofa. So as long as it's presentable, clean, and styled, you'll be fine. But for fixture, that is something that comes with the house. Most fixtures are fairly expensive to replace. So I'm talking about the basic light fixtures, for example, or hardware, you know, like those knobs on your kitchen drawers that you can get at big box stores like Home Depot or Lowe's very inexpensively. These improvements will go a long way for your return on investment. So if you can find a budget somewhere to do that, I would recommend investing in changing out the fixtures. And then going back to your kitchen cabinet, this is a big ticket item. And since it's in great condition and you have no budget or energy to paint or change it, I would say deep clean the cabinet and make sure it looks presentable and update the hardware if they're really outdated. About the sectional, it sounds like you're living while you're selling, so I will leave it as is. Again, if it's in great conditions, I will leave it alone. But just to make sure your placement, your furniture placement in your room makes sense and will bring out the focal point of your room. You can also freshen up the sofa by refluffing the pillow. And I know that sounds super, like, basic, but actually it does help a lot. Every time when we have accent pillows on the couch or even within the couch itself, I pat everything down, I take everything up and refluff it, and sometimes I turn it around. I turn a cushion, you know, backwards or whatever. Because also, like, I mean, obviously for staging furniture, not as much, but for furniture that you've sat on a long time, it does sag after a while. And the other trick that I have is I get extra cotton battings sometimes when I'm in Joann's or like any fabric store would do. And so they look like these cotton balls basically, but they're basically the stuffing that you put into cushions and stuff. So if your sofa is looking a little bit saggy, just get those things. Like, they go on sale all the time at Joann's. Like, definitely look for coupons for sure. And then you just buy them and stuff them in, you know, whatever you think looks saggy. And then also a lot of times corners look really great when they're basically prop up and stiffen up. So I've worked on set, for example, we will actually shove extra batting in the corner just to make the pillow look really fluffy and big. And with appropriate accent pillows and throws or things like that, you can definitely warm up the space and refresh the sofa. With your dated tiles in the bathroom, this we run into a lot doing older homes here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I've seen many dated beige and bone color tile kitchen countertops and bathrooms as well. In fact, I just did one a couple days ago. And as well, like, I've also seen those Pepto-Bismol pink ones and the super bright green ones. I mean, you kind of name it and I've seen it. So I would say with tiling, leave them alone because these are really big ticket items, again, to replace. And if you're selling your home fairly soon, you won't recoup the return on investment on this. Usually if you have, you know, at least 1 or 2 years out and you want to do a full remodel, because not only you will get to enjoy it, your return on investment will be recouped by the time you go on the market. So in those scenarios, that makes a lot of sense. But if you're selling your home basically within 6 months, I would not do that. So I would just leave it alone. And not to mention, remodeling can also delay your marketing timeline. So I would recommend just make sure your grout is in really good condition and make sure you have a deep clean before you go on the market. I know these sounds very common sense, but cleaning really is your best friend here to refresh a lot of different things. It definitely will make the home look well-maintained. Like, for example, like, if you walk into a hotel room, right? Like, it's very exciting. You're staying in a hotel and everything looks very clean and fresh and even smell fresh, you know, that hotel smell. You instantly feel much better and you feel welcome and you feel excited to be in the room. But if you are sent into a room where, oh my God, you're seeing dirty spots on the carpet, they're like visible stains, and you know, like, you're seeing like dog hair on your towels, you know, like little things like that. Immediately you're kind of like, oh, do they even clean the room? you know, stuff like that. So like cleaning definitely goes a long way, even though it sounds like a total common sense thing to say. So with repainting, if you really don't have the budget, touch up as much as you can. I once did a project where most of the interior walls were painted peach color, which is a color where people either really love it or really hate it. And in this case, obviously the homeowner really loved it. But there was no, I mean, like, it was really difficult to ask her to repaint because her house is actually going under. So she literally had no budget to repaint. And then she also had a dining room that was blood red, which they end up repainting. They had to because it was just too much. I mean, the peach color walls are not ideal, but I mean, most people can live with it. But with a blood red dining room color, it just really is a lot. Especially when you take photographs for the online pictures, it doesn't look good because especially with the more pigmented colors, the light bounce more off those colors, so it will look really weird in the pictures. So yeah, so they didn't have a lot of budget, so they actually got primer paint, which is the cheapest paint you could really buy, and they repainted the primer with it. They repainted the wall with the primer paint. And I have not seen your house personally, so I would recommend assess this with your real estate agent or with a friend who is really good at pulling designs together. If you have zero budget, just do as much as you can to touch up. You know, if you have scuff marks on the wall, you can take that out very easily with magic eraser. And you don't have to get the real magic eraser. Walgreens sells a knockoff one, Target does too. So look at your own budget and see. But they sell them at Home Depot, for example. They're really great. I mean, I've used magic eraser on many different things. I've even used it on paper and stuff like that. But definitely test a little tiny corner before you commit to the entire thing. And the other thing too, once I had someone call me and said it doesn't work, and I said, okay, like, why did it not work? It turned out that they didn't wet the sponge. So yeah, when you bought the magic eraser, you have to wet the sponge. That's how you activate the cleaning power. So just so you know, if you never use one. But I found that that's kind of like the secret weapon to get a lot of scuff marks out, even with like furniture scraping the wall and stuff like that. So I would say do as much as you can to touch up. And the other thing with this particular budget thing, with this particular project, I downplay the peach walls by styling, basically. I use a lot of black and white artworks to really break down the peach color rooms and to downplay the colors as well. And I also use colors in bedspread and accessories that will complement the space. But I definitely did a much more muted color palette so that there's a more contrast between the peach and my decorative accessories. And with your brick fireplace, I have not seen it personally, but from the sound of it, I think it's something you can probably leave alone for the sale and just make sure that you clean it. A lot of times I see traces of fireplace burning and staining the fireplace, like this black soot on top of it. So just make sure you have a deep clean before it goes on the market or have the pictures taken. A working fireplace is a great selling feature. The last question is also from Phyllis. So I thought of another question topic you might want to discuss on another episode. If you're replacing appliances before putting your home on the market, what kind and how much should you spend, etc.? The reason I thought of this is that yesterday our 14-year-old refrigerator died a sudden death. I came home to melting ice all over the floor, thawed and dripping frozen foods, and liquid popsicles. I had planned on eventually replacing the refrigerator anyway before we put our home on the market, since it was bisque colored and the other appliances were stainless. But I haven't even started to shop around or even to think much about it until I was forced to do so late last night. While I was in the store, I kept wondering if I should just buy the least expensive side-by-side model or more expensive French door model. The French door model seemed to be much more popular, judging by how many were on the showroom floors. And the salesman seemed to agree that they were more popular these days. So I thought that perhaps it would help to attract home buyers and justify the extra cost. But I wasn't quite sure. Also, I wasn't sure how brand aware most home buyers really are. In other words, if I skimped and bought a lower-end brand, such as Frigidaire versus a better mid-range or better brand, such as a Samsung, at least consumer report testing and customer reviews seem to rate it highly. Will home buyers really even notice? Since we aren't selling until the spring, I wanted to make sure I got one that didn't seem to have too many potential repair issues, was an ample size for a family, and one with a water and ice dispenser. I was thinking that if I was going to spend the money, it should have enough space and the typical popular features from a potential homeowner would want, so that they wouldn't be thinking that they will have to replace it in the near future. I think many of us would love to hear your thoughts on this subject, or do appliances really matter much at all, as long as they match in color, aren't too old, and are in good working order. In my case, since I need a new refrigerator ASAP, I was limited to the ones in stock and stores that could deliver the next day. I didn't find any last night, but went out again today, armed with my consumer report rating, and after a lot of mental jumping back and forth over the options and angst on how expensive refrigerators are, I ended up purchasing a stainless steel 28 cubic feet Samsung French door refrigerator with an indoor ice maker and water dispenser on sale for what seemed like a good deal of $1,700. Somehow though, even though I'm sure I'll enjoy the refrigerator for the time we are here, I'm not sure if we really were able to recoup our money on this one. Just FYI, our home is probably a mid-range home in size and price for our area in Maryland, and a bit larger and more expensive than a typical starter home, but definitely not as large and upgraded or as new as many of the homes in our area. I was thinking that maybe a little nicer fridge might help to give our home a few perks compared to those of larger and newer homes. So my answer is that I would say that if your other appliances are all stainless, first of all, buy something that is stainless, which I think you did. You do want to have one that match all your appliances' colors if possible. As far as buying the cheaper model or the French model, that is actually up to you. But personally, that I'm glad you bought the French one. Because since you're still living in the home while you're selling, it's probably nicer just for living to have the more expensive version that has all the things that you want and you will enjoy using. In my experiences working with investors, they generally buy the cheapest model since they want to get the most profit out of the sale. But you are living your home, unlike investors who they don't really care, right? So I personally think it's fine either way. I personally do not know if it makes a significant difference what brand of fridge you have when you're in the mid price range. But I do know that there are statistics on preference for energy efficient models, which I think most today's refrigerators are anyway. And I think the allure of the brand really comes in more significantly when you have a higher end home. And I'm talking about homes like you see on Million Dollar Listing LA or New York, where they have all these really cool and fancy toys and tech gadgets for the home. Then I think it is common for the potential buyers at that level to expect something like a Sub-Zero type of fridge or a Viking range. So I think those are really for buyers who are at, you know, multiple million dollars. So if you're kind of mid-range in Maryland, I'm not sure exactly how much it is in your market, but I think you'll be fine. And like you said, it will probably look nicer just because you have a more updated refrigerator. So that's it for today's podcast. And I hope today's Q&A session has really helped you guys. And remember, you can always submit your photos and questions in our private Facebook group. You can join just by search for the Home Staging Show and ask to join. And I'll approve you as soon as I can. So thank you guys for submitting your questions today. I really appreciate it. And I hope the answers have been helpful. And you're listening and you have comments or any additional ideas for the question that were asked today on the show, please comment in the comment section of the show notes. I'm sure all these listeners will benefit from your knowledge as well. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to leave a rating or review on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Thanks again for listening and happy staging!